Jackson.
Brad, are you ready to have a spooky conversation about the spookiest Disney Channel original movie that we've talked about yet so far?
I was about to say, I mean, we're pretty early on for you to be claiming spookiest Disney Channel movie, but that we have watched yet, I think is a fair assessment.
It's certainly spookier than Brink.
Well, it's spookier than Brink, but is it? Okay, here's a question.
Maybe not as spooky as That Darn Dog or whatever that movie was called.
Well, that has definitely probably given me more nightmares than Halloween Town ever will, but is it as spooky as the beginning of Under Wraps?
I totally forgot about Under Wraps. No, it is not as spooky as the beginning of Under Wraps.
Your number one movie. Yeah. Now, I'm not talking about the entire movie because, you know, the entire movie is not spooky.
No, but the beginning where you're like,
Did
I accidentally start the wrong movie when you're watching Under Wraps?
Yeah. But outside of that, yes, I will give you the spookiest movie because we are in the spooky season now. Can we pretend like we missed doing this last quarter in order to line it up for October and not just because life suddenly got a hold of us and we forgot. No, this is why we did it. Because we said that's a Halloween movie.
Gotta be on Halloween.
Yeah. We got to do it in October. So, oh man, where do we even start with Halloween Town?
I will say that spoiler alert: if you know the title of Halloween Town 2, this movie is a lot less shocking. I had never seen Halloween Town before last night when I watched it, and knowing the title of the second one kind of takes all the shock out of the big reveal at the end of this one.
So I did not know the title of the second one coming into this.
Well, good for you.
I do know it now, and I do agree that, you know, it's going to it will spoil the movie for you, though so will listening to this episode.
Dampens it a bit.
To be fair. Yeah, let's just go ahead and say that, you know, spoiler alert, go watch this movie before you listen to this episode so that now I can say I didn't have to know the title of the second. I did not have to know that it was called Calabar's Revenge for, you know, like within one second
of seeing that guy. Oh, that's the bad guy for sure.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, that's the I don't know if when I saw the mayor, I immediately said that's the bad guy. I maybe kind of wonder, but definitely the first time that you see him there in the movie theater, right? Like the first time you get any look at this is the big baddie, I immediately went, okay, well, that's the mayor.
The first time he was on screen, before I even knew his name was Calabar, I was like, all right, no, this guy's for sure the bad guy. He's too smarmy. Like, he's got secret bad guy written all over him.
He's got secret bad guy written out. Yes, that's definitely a good way to put it. Yeah, I don't.
But let's start at the beginning. So I want to say the first comment I made, I watched this with my wife, and the first comment I made was music by Mark Mothersbaugh, the guy from Devo. How did they get Mark Mothersbaugh to do the music for this movie? But while the movie was going on, I was looking at his Wikipedia, and Mark Mothersbaugh does the music for a lot of things. Like, he is a prolific music producer. But I just thought that was wild that Halloween Town had music by the guy from Devo.
Hey, man, whatever you got to do to pay the bills. Though I'm impressed that you recognized that is who that was, because I saw the credits and went, who, and you know, later hit up IMDb and went, okay, well, that's why I said who.
Yeah, if you're not a big Devo Tay.
No.
I know Mark Mothersbaugh because he did the music for The Royal Tenenbaums, the Wes Anderson movie, and that is one of my favorite movies. And I looked him up after I saw that for the first time because I loved the music in that movie, and that's when I learned he was the guy from Devo.
And that's and those Fun are basically the same movie, right?
Sure, yeah. Royal Tenenbaums and Halloween and
Halloween Town. Yeah, so I mean, really, I feel like, to me anyway, the recognizable names on this movie are going to be Debbie Reynolds,
mm-hmm.
right? Because she was in everything, you know? And then Judith Hogue, who apparently I later read passed on the going to the premiere of Armageddon to film this movie. And I'm like, I might have gone to the premiere of Armageddon. Just that's just me. But, you know, everybody's got to pay bills. So a movie's a movie. But, you know, perhaps best known if you're at least around, I would say, our age. I was tempted to say my age, but I think our age, to as being April O'Neil from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
The live action one?
Uh-huh.
Whoa.
Yeah, you know, the one from 1990?
Dude, yes, with the puppet faces.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, you just exploded my brain.
And now you're like, oh, that's who that is.
Huh. Yeah.
So outside of that, though, you get a lot of people who've got like so you have a lot of people on here who have a lot of credits. And then you've also got some people on here, as with any film, where, you know, it's this and like two other movies.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a TV movie, though. Sure. I don't know. I feel like maybe I'm getting a little, am I starting to, am I about to die from like being too cold or something, where I'm looking at this movie and going, it's another Disney movie and it's not that bad.
No, I mean, you know, final judgments obviously come at the end, but I think that this was a entertaining movie. I never wanted to turn it off. There were times when we were with the dog one where I was like, okie doke. Yeah, this is
Am I still
this
gonna
has gone far enough?
I'm not saying final, but yes, definitely I feel like this was a change in that, as you just said, I didn't have to force myself to keep watching this movie. And I think that's good. Even though, you know, what the beginning of the movie, I'm like, okay, so this is Mary Poppins. No, it's not Mary Poppins. A little bit further in this movie, I'm like, okay, this is Harry Potter, but it's not Harry Potter. I don't know. I see a lot of and probably what I'm actually seeing is a lot of tropes.
Yeah.
Present in this movie,
for sure.
But they work. So good for them. But yes. Right from the beginning. I mean, you have the grandmother has the bag that, you know, holds way more stuff than it should hold.
Right.
She jumps out of the bus, which why could the bus not go to the road to drop her off?
I mean, so she could have that moment. But she was passed on for Mary Poppins. So now she's got her carpet bag and her riding the umbrella down as she falls through the air softly. But yeah, I immediately turned to Claire and was like, "Oh, so yeah, a little bit of Mary Poppins in here." But that's not the beginning. The beginning, you know, is when we open, Marnie and her mom are arguing about why Marnie can't go out for Halloween, and we pretty early on get this, you know, sense that mom hates Halloween, and she doesn't want anybody going out. She doesn't want anybody, you know, dressing up. She doesn't want trick-or-treating. She doesn't, you know, witch stuff, ghost stuff, ghoul, you know, stuff like that. She doesn't want it. And then we're introduced to the mom, Judith Hogue, who you were talking about, Marnie, her little sister, Sophie, and her brother, Dylan. I recognize him from something, but he's like super good. He plays like a super good kind of dork, you know, like he's kind of a nerd, kind of a goody two shoes, like very much a know-it-all. Like I really like him as an actor. I think he's very good at that role, this role in Halloween Town.
See, I don't know if you recognize him or if you recognize the, again, the dork trope. because I kind of thought the same. I mean, honestly, because I kind of thought the same thing. And then I went and checked out his IMDb page, and I'm like, do I really remember the soda kid from Lizzie McGuire, you know, from one episode? I don't think so. You know, or the kid, like his, I think the two things he has are Earth 2, which I've never seen, and Bailey Kipper's POV, which I remember that was a thing that existed, but I definitely didn't watch it. You know, and outside of that, it's like an episode of Becker, an episode of Frasier, but, you know, this kid falls into the, what was the kid's name from Boy Meets World? Minkus.
Yeah.
You know, it's that geek nerd do, you know, goody two shoes trope,
mm-hmm.
I think is at least, and now I'm not saying that you definitely didn't recognize him from something, but for me, I thought I recognized him, and then I went, oh, that's, I'm just recognizing what he is more than this particular actor in this film.
So Claire and I just got done watching through That 70s Show, and he plays young Stephen Hyde in two episodes. That is where I did, looking at his filmography right now, that's where I know him from. But that is not where I thought I would know him from. And so I am just, I think, kind of transposing him onto every, you know, stereotypical dork role from a movie.
Or like the kid from Step by Step.
Yeah.
You know, the comic relief. There's plenty of them. Right, right. You know, nerd kid with glasses,
mm-hmm.
is what he falls into. By the way, speaking of the beginning of the movie, you know, you talk about how mom doesn't want to do the Halloween. As the film opens, right, there's everybody trick-or-treating, and some kid, you know, says, okay, let's go to this house. No, let's go to another, you know, or we're going to, like, basically the idea that you don't want to go to that house. What happens at their house that makes kids not want to go there?
I bet everybody just knows you ring the doorbell at that house, nobody's coming to the door. Like, they're a porch light off kind of family. I don't imagine the mom is, like, throwing eggs at kids or burning them or something. Like, she's probably just not answering the door.
But, okay, so she's not answering the door. Let me ask you, as a kid, would you have remembered that a certain house just didn't answer the door enough to, like, the next year, your friend goes, let's go to that house, and you're like, nah, let's get, like, even, number one, I don't think I would have ever remembered a house that didn't answer the door, and number two, even if I did, if all they did was not answer the door, I would still give it another shot the next year.
Mm. Yeah, well, maybe it's school, like... You know, they harp pretty hard in this first, you know, 10 minutes on how weird Marnie is. So maybe that's like where the weird kid lives and her weird family.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows what you may get at the weird kid's house. So, which, like, she's weird. Well, they tell us she's weird. Right?
Yeah. They don't do much telegraphing that she's weird. Like, she seems like a pretty normal 13-year-old girl. But, man, they really ram down your throat that she is the weird kid.
Yeah. Why isn't she more into, you know, allowed to celebrate Halloween? It's about all the weird stuff that she's into, and she draws the ghost at school and all those sorts of things. But, like, and then, you know, again, kind of moving ahead a little bit, but still on this weird theme, you know, grandma brings her the hieroglyphics,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, she makes the call to the 1941 Wolfman movie, you know, and talks about having Franken. Like, there are all of these things that she says that say, I am the weird kid.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's like they just keep telling us that she's the weird kid.
Right. So, yeah, they want to go out for Halloween, or Marnie wants to go out for Halloween, and the mom won't let them. And then we cut to the scene that you were talking about earlier where the bus flies in, hovers. Well, it drops the spooky bus stop sign. The bus hovers 10 feet above the ground, forcing the grandma to jump out and Mary Poppins fall to the ground. And then her...
And she didn't say, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
Yeah, she did not say that.
Which is just missed opportunity. How could she have not known to do
Disney,
that?
Disney would wait, what, 30 years to pull that one out. in a Marvel movie, but so she falls down, her bag is alive, and she's trying to coax the bag out of the bus. And then they walk to the house, and surprise, Grandma's here, which I don't think would be a surprise because it seems like Grandma shows up every Halloween. But Grandma comes bearing costumes, and this just makes the mom very mad. And Grandma gets all the kids in the costumes, and it's time for dinner, and they eat dinner, and Grandma's like telling them about how she, you know, where she's telling them stories, and the mom's like, you know, giving her the eye and whatever, and very clearly, like, the mom knows what's coming. And we at this point can infer that the grandma is a witch. Like, I think that's hasn't been explicitly said at this point, but we understand the grandma's a witch. And we can infer from that the mom is probably aware of this and is a witch herself. At least I did. Like, it's kind of obvious, I think, that pretty early on you can figure out that the mom kind of rejects the witch life and doesn't want her daughter to follow in those footsteps.
Well, and so before Grandma gets there, though, they do a good job of, you know, for all of the telling us about Marnie, and I think that maybe that's why telling us about Marnie being weird is kind of awkward to me here, because they do a lot of other stuff, like you said, where they don't come right out and say it immediately, but they let you know, and still in some maybe somewhat heavy-handed ways, because the scene that we're missing here is right before Grandma shows up at the house, Sophie's like, gonna eat a cookie, and Mom's like, nope, no cookies till after dinner. And she's like, I really want a cookie. And all of a sudden the cookie starts hovering off the plate, mm-hmm. heading towards her with her head turned. So she doesn't know what's happening. And Mom's like, oh no, not again. Grabs the cookie out of the air and like stuffs it in her mouth. So that kind of tells us
Sophie is subconsciously exercising her witchy powers.
Yes. Yeah. We'll get into how magic works later on, but this falls in line with how magic works. They do a lot of that, I think, though, of telling you in other ways that a thing is a thing.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things about this movie comes when Grandma is kind of talking to all the kids. She pulls out a book called Halloween Town. And in this book, there's a picture of a girl, like a drawing of a girl on a broom. And everyone is immediately convinced, it's Marnie. Look at this picture. It's Marnie. And they're passing the book around saying how much it's Marnie. It's a picture of a girl. Like, it was so funny to me that, like, this is so clearly just a random picture of a girl. And it looks... There's nothing specific about it that makes it look like Marnie, but
I don't know. I think it's more than a passing resemblance to Marnie. If anything, that made it kind of weird a little bit when the brother's like, no, that can't be Marnie. This girl's cute.
Yeah. Oh, that was gross.
Because we know that, you know, what this is a picture of his sister, because all of these things that are in this book will eventually come to pass. So, I didn't have as much of an issue with that, though. It's generic girl with more than a passing resemblance to her. And I did read later that apparently that book was drawn for this movie, never actually published. So it's not an Elf sort of thing, where now you can go buy the Halloween Town book, but it was drawn, and the actress who plays Marnie, her picture was sent to the artist so they could draw that. So I feel, well, I found this out after the fact, and that kind of reiterated that, yes, it's not just random girl, Jeremy.
Sorry, artist.
Yeah. Now that you have dunked on that artist's arting ability. Yeah. I like that arting ability. Who are you going to dunk on next, bud?
Well, no one yet. I got more dunks to dunk, but not anything right now. So Mom puts a stop to story time pretty quick and says it's bedtime. Everybody gets in bed. And then Mom and Grandma, which, are we just going to call them Mom and Grandma, or are we going to call them Aggie and Gwen? I feel like Mom and Grandma's a little easier
Mom and
to
Grandma.
Keep track
Mom
of.
Mom and Grandma. Okay. I mean, they're not their own people in this movie. They exist in service to Marnie. Marnie is the protagonist of the film, and they are there to be. Mom is there to be the person who is trying to protect her, and Grandma is the one who's trying to, you know, but within their roles as Marnie's mom and Marnie's grandma. So Mom and Grandma, that's who they are.
So Mom and Grandma are having a very heated discussion. And again, early on in this movie, one of the best effects, when Grandma, so Grandma is kind of making fun of the mom for putting chicken leftovers in the fridge. And she says, "Don't you know these are better when they're fresh?" And she turns the leftovers into a chicken that's standing in the bowl. And then the grandma turns the chicken back into the leftovers. And I really like the effect of when the grandma turned the chicken, the live chicken, back into leftovers. The cut to the chicken leftovers in the air and let them fall back into the bowl. I really appreciated that effect.
It didn't just cut to chicken leftovers in the bowl. Like, it didn't just undo what had been done. But yes, that little plop there at the end was very satisfying. Though mom is not a great witch, or is just so lapsed in her witchiness. Because Marnie's listening in on this entire conversation.
And we find out that Grandma knew it, but the mom idea.
Exactly. Mom is clueless, though. How good is Grandma? Grandma's like, "I thought I saw her. I thought I felt someone listening." Like, if all you thought was somebody was listening in and you didn't know it was Marnie, how did you not know it was the shadow? What did she call him early on, like before he actually has his name? The shadow man or whatever. Like, how does she not know it's something evil listening in on her conversation? And she just kind of goes, somebody's listening in on us, but that's cool.
It's probably a member of the family, unless they had a key to get into the house. She's doing a lot of inferring.
Yes, there. It's well known that you know, evil beings are good at doing, you know, are good at creating living statues out of people. But when it comes to entering houses without keys, beans, that's where the line gets drawn.
That's
sorry, I will freeze people, but I will not do B&E. I don't do B&Es.
So after this fight that they have, it's time for Grandma to go back home to Halloween Town. And so she heads out, and Marnie and Dylan follow Grandma because they got to figure out where she's going, if she's telling the truth. And so they see her at the bus stop, and this time the bus drives up because, as we find out, the kids are going to get in through the emergency exit door in the back of the bus, which luckily Halloween Town buses don't have that horrible buzzing sound when the emergency exit door opens.
So that's immediately what you thought about too when you saw it, right? Because that's immediately what I thought about. I went, you can't just open the back door to the bus because an alarm goes off and the bus driver immediately knows that door's been opened.
And everyone on the bus looks to the back to see why the alarm was going off. But so Halloween Town Transit Authority buses don't have the alarm. So Marnie and Dylan get on the bus with Grandma. And then we cut to a comp of a picture of the bus flying through the air. Not a whole lot of care was put into the visual effects of the bus flying. It's literally just a motion blurred photo of a bus flying through the air. Although when they're landing in Halloween Town, they do take care to like have it pass behind buildings and stuff. So I will give them credit for that. But the comped picture of the bus flying through the air kind of made me laugh. And so they end up in Halloween Town, and Grandma gets off the bus, and we kind of go, we get like a, I don't know, there's, we get this like fly through of Halloween Town a little bit. You kind of get to see what the place looks like. Grandma has a conversation with a passerby where she says she made sandwiches for the people at the Headless Shelter. Which is a very Disney Channel
didn't
joke.
Think that they couldn't eat them.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the fact that they couldn't eat them because they don't have any heads. And so we kind of see Grandma, you know, interacting, and then the kids come out. And is this where we find out that Sophie also was on the bus? I don't remember how long it takes to before
kids,
we figure
kids
out that the smallest of the siblings also came.
Right, kids get off the bus, and this is. I don't know. I'm struggling to find what is the most yada 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 part of this movie for the sake of the plot. But this one's pretty high up there because Marnie and her brother get off the bus, and then the bus pulls away, and there's Sophie on the other side of the bus, and they're like, "Sophie, how did you get here? I got on the bus after you guys got on the bus. How did you know that we were? I was just pretending to sleep." Okay, so I have no issue with the whole pretending to sleep while, you know, Marnie comes, because after overhearing the conversation, she goes back upstairs, you know, relays everything to the brother. The brother says, "Well, clearly insanity is hereditary. Hopefully it skips the boys," which I found kind of funny. And, you know, then she's like, "I'm going to go follow Grandma." His reasoning for following is because he's the man of the house, so he's got to keep Marnie safe. And all of this is happening in the room that Marnie and Sophie share. So I have no issue with Sophie saying, "I was pretending to be asleep, and I overheard that entire conversation." The issue I have is that Marnie and, gosh, what is the brother's name?
Dylan.
Okay. Marnie and Dylan get in the bus and are seated at the back of the bus. And again, as we've discussed, budget cuts over at Halloween Town Transit, they're rough. But if you are like right next to or even within two rows of that door, is Sophie a witch or a ninja? Because how did she get in that door after them without them having any clue that she got on the bus?
Sophie's on the roof or... she's wrapped around the rear differential. Like, Sophie is not in this bus. There is nowhere that Sophie could have been inside the bus where Halloween Town people wouldn't have seen her and Marnie and Dylan wouldn't have seen her. Like, Sophie's laying on top of the gas tank or something. Like, she's not in the bus. But nevertheless, she's in Halloween Town now, which is where the plot needs her to be because we got to have some drama. All the kids are gone, and Mom's going to be worried when she finds out.
And all of this is happening on Halloween Eve, it's on Halloween, right? And Grandma's leaving at what, 10 p.m. I think.
Mm-hmm. But don't worry,
2 hours. Yes. Go ahead. Let's talk about the next part of it that we have to yada yada through.
Well, there's one, two things happen between the next yada yada and the. Where we're
getting,
at right
getting
now.
Them to that point. Go yes. ahead and we can talk so about Calabar and
the mayor comes up and he says, you know, he's talking to him like, and they say they're Aggie's grandkids, and he's like, "Oh my gosh, does that mean you're Gwen's kids?" And we find out that, like, you know, infer that they dated, her and the mayor, Gwen and the mayor.
By the way, this is where the character Snape came from.
And then the mayor says, like, "Oh yeah, she lives, you know, wherever." And they're like, "All right, well, we got to go see her." And so the mayor then calls a cab for them. And in this magical Halloween town, the cab is a cab from Earth. Like, it is a car. The only thing about the cab is that it's driven by a skeleton whose puppeteer has some sort of horrible, overactive finger disease, because the eyebrows on this skeleton never stop moving. The mouth operates normally, but oh my gosh, this skeleton is got the eyebrows of Jack Black, because man, the eyebrows are just going nuts all the time.
But how else is the skeleton going to convey emotion? We have to convey lots and lots of emotion.
What emotion is he conveying?
All of them, all the time.
Worry, anger, happiness, like all of them. All the eyebrow emotions are being conveyed all the time by this skeleton. But anyway, so the skeleton drives him up to the Cromwell Manor, where
also known as a house.
Yeah, just a house on the hill, pretty much. And they get out of the cab and go up to the locked gate. And Marnie's trying to use, you know, like TV witch kind of powers to undo the lock. Dylan starts making fun of her. Marnie like walks away from the gate and says, like, you know, she's telling Dylan to lighten up or whatever. And then we go back and Sophie pushes the gate open. And they say, how did you do that? And she says, you know, I just pushed the gate open. And as they're walking away, she says, and I wish that the lock would be a frog. And cut to, or pan down, there's a frog on the ground. So this is when we get our first kind of taste that Sophie is also a witch. Because she was able to turn the lock into a frog and get them into the yard.
Sophie's not just a witch. Sophie is probably behind Grandma. I would say Sophie is the best witch of the Cromwells at this point in time.
Yeah, she's got a good handle on her powers, even if she doesn't really understand.
So anyway, at this point, we are to the next yada yada. So Jeremy, yes. how is this entire movie going to take place in 2 hours?
Because you don't have to worry. 2 hours on Earth might be 2 days or 2 weeks in Halloween Town. There is no link of time. It's just whatever the plot requires.
There is no link of time, but yet we are going to, I think we are going to find out, because I don't think we know this at this point. We are going to find out that you can only travel between Earth and Halloween Town, which is Halloween Town's another dimension?
She says worlds. Between worlds. Yeah.
Anyway, that you can only travel back and forth on Halloween. But when is that in Halloween Town? Like, was the last time she was there, was she like 10 years younger or something like that? No, think about it. Honestly, every hour is at least a day, minimum a day. I haven't done the math here, but like, is this her last Halloween to visit?
Oh, well, yeah.
And
who knows?
Was the
who
last
knows how
one,
old
was she
is?
An infant?
She's lived there for 200 years.
I don't get this.
She's lived in the house for 200 years, my man. Who knows how old she is?
I didn't really even think this all through till just now. And now I'm like, no, that's just way too, so maybe it is the day of Halloween stretches out, right? So that, you know, each hour is at least a day or maybe a week. But then I guess maybe the rest of the, you know, the next 364 days all pass in like a week or something of Halloween Town. Like, I don't know. I guess if you're going to do this, however you want to do it, you can play griffball however you want to play griffball. But I don't know. That was another weird part of this plot.
So they get into the house and Grandma like welcomes them in with open arms, because clearly this is what she wants. She wants the kids to be a part of Halloween Town, and she wants them to be witches. And so she shows them, she's got, what does she call it, Merlin's talisman, and
yes.
She's
scepter. that's what it is, but yeah, it's called talisman over and over again.
She has to use a potion to get it going. But she's trying to, we come into her like sticking this cauldron into a witch microwave. And it turns out she's trying to use an instant potion to get this talisman up and running so she can defeat the, at this point, unknown evil that is haunting Halloween Town. And so she puts the instant potion into the talisman, says the magic spell. It doesn't work. The talisman does not light up, and that's kind of when we figure out that the fetch quest of this movie is going to be getting the hair of the werewolf, the sweat of a ghost, and a vampire's fang to make the potion that is needed to get this talisman up and running so that they can defeat the, I almost said the Dark Lord, but it's defeat the bad thing the darkness that's haunting Halloween Town.
By the way, before anybody asks me, I do know that Harry Potter, the first book of Harry Potter, came out before this film. But yeah, it's one of those things where I don't know. Like, is it just because it's that tropey that you have these things that exist in both of those, or was this? Gosh, what's the nice way of saying stolen?
borrowed.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with borrowed. Was this borrowed from Harry Potter or something? Because there's a lot of stuff that goes back and forth. But honestly, I think it's just tropes. Yeah. So the instant potion's not going to work. You have to go do all these things, and ta-da! Now we have a reason. By the way, we also kind of skipped over the whole they spend so much time. The more that I'm thinking about it, they spend so much more time convincing us that Sophie is a witch than they ever do that Marnie is a witch. Because like before the kids, as the kids are walking up to the house, Grandma goes, "Someone is coming." And that's a callback to the very beginning of the movie where Sophie is standing at the window and Sophie goes, "Someone is coming."
And it's Grandma.
Right. But again, it's to help us know that, you know, that someone is coming at the beginning of the movie was Sophie telegraphing some more of her witchy powers to us, because that's a thing that witches can do.
So I feel like in a non-Disney Channel movie, there would have been resentment. So we would have been introduced more to the fact that Sophie has this grasp on her powers that Marnie doesn't have. And in a not hour and 24 minute Disney Channel original movie, there would have been this whole subplot of resentment where Marnie resents her for being able to use her powers so early, and Marnie feels inadequate and mad, and Marnie has to get over that. And, you know, be okay with the fact that Sophie comes to it much more easily than her. And by the end of the movie, Marnie has a grasp on her powers, and she and Sophie work together. But this movie just, I don't think, had time for that. And probably also was trying to steer away from any kind of resentment. You know, they fight. Dylan is a dweeb, and Marnie fights with Dylan because he's her younger brother. But there's no like real deep-seated kind of emotional resentment that I feel like would have been in if this was a, you know, an actual, you know, quote, studio film.
Well, and so I this is going to kind of take us away from, you know, in the movie, but just real quick, this was the second DCOM movie that was greenlit, right? It's the fourth one that was released, but technically the very first DCOM movie that was like greenlit as this is going to be a DCOM movie, this is a thing we're doing now, was Brink. The second one was this one, and essentially now I've read this a couple of different ways. Either the director felt like they needed a $20 to $30 million budget for the script he was given, or he was sold it as it was going to be a $20 to $30 million budget, but it ended up being a $4 million budget movie, and they filmed the whole thing in 24 days. So maybe what we're actually seeing there is a Sophie subplot that got left on the cut, you know, that got left on not even the cutting room floor, but the script rewrite floor. As a result of, oh crud, we've got to fit this all into a really short film time, and we don't have a lot of money to do it. But yeah, it's like Sophie, we spent all this time showing us that she's a witch, and then later we're going to get told that Marnie is a witch because, you know, Marnie's going to, I think, ask something about, did I do all this stuff that Sophie did? And Mom's like, oh yeah, you used to do all that stuff too. Mm-hmm. Like when you were younger, or, you know, somehow this got normalized out of her.
And that's a very hand wavy way to kind of, I think, dismiss that subplot of Marnie feeling inadequate.
Yeah. Yeah. That you, even though like now that you say that, you know, when Grandma is reading them the story, she asks Marnie, she's like, have you been doing any spells or taking any midnight flights? And Marnie's like, I wish, but there's nothing special about me. So, yeah, they were totally setting that up. Now that you say that, I definitely see that. And then, again, I think that was one of those things that just didn't make the final cut. So,
and we're not at the end yet, but I feel like it would have made the ending pay off a lot better if there had been some tension within the three of them. Some actual, like, real family tension, the ending would have paid off a lot better.
Yeah, because, well, and we're not at the ending yet, but
right.
There's another thing that just doesn't make, I'm not even sure why it's there, other than haha joke at the end. So we're starting the fetch quest with Grandma.
Yes. We go back to town to shop for the items. And this is when we're introduced to...
Luke?
Yes. This is when we're introduced to Luke. But we're introduced to Luke while Marnie and Grandma are looking at brooms. Which... So, the brooms are sold by Elvis? And Halloween Town is...
Zombelvis.
Yeah. Halloween Town is more or less a nondescript... I don't know, Pacific Northwest looking town. And all of the brooms at this guy's broom shop are straight out of 2015 in Back to the Future 2. They look like things that would be on the wall of the Cafe 80s in Back to the Future 2, because they are all like, they are all just that stereotypical 80s looking radical kind of design. And I was just like, wow, that is so out of place that Zombie Elvis is selling 1980s brooms to whoever wants them.
I mean, you know, you're in Halloween Town. There's a demand for brooms. And I think it's funny that you say nondescript Pacific Northwest, because it was filmed in Oregon.
Oh,
as
nice.
A matter of fact, the town where it was filmed now does like a Halloween Town, Spirit of Halloween Town festival.
Really?
So that's, yeah. So cool. they've made a whole thing out of this. They have, you know, the pumpkin on their square and everything. So they bought into this whole thing. And by the way, the hip sales creature, as he is credited, did you recognize him? I bet you didn't, because he had a lot of makeup on.
He's credited as hip sales creature.
At least the IMDb, which just typically comes from the credits. I did not sit through the credits to find it. But did you recognize who that was?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so it's Kenneth Choi, which you might recognize. Here's the thing. I'm gonna like just totally give in a little bit more of Brad and Jeremy's backstory, that he was Lewis from Last Man on Earth.
No.
Yep.
Oh, poor Lewis.
And we don't have a lot of time to go down that rabbit hole, but yeah, so that was one of those where I will tell you, I did not recognize him. But again, as I was going through the full credits on IMDb, I was like, that dude's picture looks familiar, and I clicked on it, and I'm like, oh, Lewis, that's who that is. Okay, yeah, now I know.
Poor sweet Lewis.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so they're buying brooms, and now wait, Luke was actually introduced when they were driving to Grandma's house, right?
Because, yeah, but just as like he's a, you know, he's
because Cabby tells us that he's a, is that the point where he gets called a wiener?
Yeah, yeah. Which is very important, because there's a lot of wiener talk throughout the rest of the movie. So yeah, this is the first time when he's called a wiener. We just are introduced to him as I think a monster who, you know, looks pretty now, but we don't get any backstory. It's not until he comes up to Marnie and Grandma while they're looking at brooms, to where he actually has dialogue and we find out what a wiener he really is.
Yeah, but even then we were told that he has been going around saying that he's you know, that he got this, what, his nose got made small. Eventually, the moral of the story is he got better looking as a result of a being friends with a dark figure or something like that. Which, I don't know. That then brings up then why doesn't anybody believe Grandma when she tells them that, hey, there's this dark force that's trying to take over house? Why does nobody believe Grandma when the pumpkin is all funky looking and everything in the town square? Like, there's a lot of stuff that just, I don't know, has to happen in some weird ways for this movie to need to movie, essentially.
Yeah.
But anyway, movie's gonna movie. Luke comes up. Luke acts like a wiener.
And he is just, like, so over the top. I can't believe the director didn't at some point go, like, hey, why don't you tone that down a little bit, bud? You're acting a little too much like a D-bag over here.
Do you think that it was a lack of the director doing that? Or do you think that acting was a result of them saying, no, some of the kids might still think that you're an okay person, so we're going to need you to just amp it up to a here's an apple. You can eat an apple just to show.
At this point, Luke is a jerk, and Marnie and Grandma buy a broom, and Grandma takes Marnie on a ride, a broom ride. And when they land, Mom has somehow come to Halloween Town. A person who has all but thrown her witch life away still somehow knows how to get to Halloween Town from the human world.
Apparently, all you have to do is get on the bus that just shows up whenever it, you know, because we're basically told the bus doesn't have a set schedule.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, how does a human summon the bus? It seems
but she's not a human. She's a witch.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess so.
She's a witch with very, again, as we discussed earlier, very poor powers at this point, and we will be shown that later when she is trying to do some spell on Luke and ends up creating flowers. When she does clearly say powers or something like that. And I felt like that was to tell us that, you know, Mom's magic is rusty, but yeah, somehow not so rusty that she can't get to Halloween Town when she wants to get there.
So, Mom is, you know, obviously pretty upset, and she says, like, all right, kids, it's time to go home. Which at that point I was like, really? These kids know that Halloween Town's a real place. You can't unring that bell. Like, what are you going to do? They know this place is for real. They know that at least Sophie's got powers, and I was like, I didn't fully understand the mom's plan here. But anyway, the mom says, like, it's time to go home. She takes them all to the bus station. Uh-oh, bus is having engine trouble. They can't go. And so they're stuck, and they meet Mr. Mayor, and Mr. Mayor is named Calabar, which we find out earlier when Grandma is talking to him, telling him about all the weird stuff she's seeing, and he tells her, like, oh, wow, that's so crazy.
If you're looking for stuff that says probably as the bad guy, yeah, you had some interesting stuff, but just promise me you're not going to do anything about it.
Probably just leave this one alone.
Yeah.
I'll take care of it. You probably just don't even need to worry about it too much. No problem. Mom goes to the mayor to try to see, you know, what we can do about the bus. She recognizes him as her old boyfriend, Calabar, and there's the little bit of drama that comes with that. After Calabar gets a call or whatever, he has to leave to go take care of another problem. Gwen, or I guess the mom and the kids see Grandma walking somewhere with Luke, and Sophie says one of the best lines in the movie, Grandma is going somewhere with the wiener dude.
Which is why you have to like nail down when exactly was he called a wiener again? Because it's gonna come back. It's not just that one line throwaway. We're gonna call him a wiener again, and it's even more confusing if you don't remember that he got called a wiener in the first place.
So they follow them. And they go to an abandoned movie theater where a bunch of the people of Halloween Town are frozen in time. And then we see the hooded figure come through the screen, and he yells at Grandma to give him Merlin's talisman. And she says, no. And the guy shoots his little freezing beam or whatever and hits the mom and freezes her instantly, I might add. Like, she's just frozen immediately when she gets hit.
Because there was no plot information that she needed to pass along before freezing. I know what you're about to say. And Brad
understands why I just made a point of saying, yeah. Because then, after a few more seconds, Calabar hits the grandma with his freezing beam, and grandma has roughly 5 minutes to give a whole bunch of exposition to Marnie about everything that she needs to do for the rest of the movie. So I guess it's like maybe grandma's got a little more witchy power and she can withstand the freezy beam for a little while longer, but I thought that was pretty funny. And the kids escape and go on this the actual fetch quest of getting all these things that they need. The hair of a werewolf, the sweat of a ghost, and a vampire's fang to make the actual from scratch potion needed to get Merlin's talisman up and running.
By the way, were they about to go, because as weird as it is for the kids to go on this fetch quest and the things that they will do are weird, is there a store where you can just buy all of this stuff?
They made it seem like that. Because
it was going to be so much weirder with because it was going to be so much weirder if Grandma, who knows all of these people and has to live in this place, had gone and done the things that the kids are going to do to gather up all of these items. I'm just wondering if the kids had gone down to the local Walmart or whatever, if they couldn't have picked all this up in 5 minutes or something and really cut down on the runtime of this movie a little bit.
I am almost certain that Fantasy Costco does carry these three items, probably in bulk, and they could have just gotten them all for $19.95.
Yeah, but you say $19.95. You never know what Garfield's going to ask for. $19.95, a vial of your blood. It could be anything. But, it's just... Okay, wait. So that brings up one other thing, though. Why are these people being frozen?
Yeah,
Why are certain people being frozen in the? Yeah, like what
he
was
says
important
until
about
he
the...
needs them. He might right. like I'm doing this because I might need them. He's a hoarder. He's a person hoarder.
But why did you hoard these specific people? Why did you not hoard other people? Why do the people if what he does? Okay, so mom and grandma both get hit by the beam. Mom freezes immediately. Grandma passes along the necessary information, and then freezes. Because plot's got a plot, but like we get told that, when grandma goes and talks to mom, and then I even think when we see the character that she talks to at the bus stop, whose only purpose is so that we can later see that, what grandma's telling mom is real. She says something about like they turn mean or something like that. Right. So essentially Zootopia, they go feral and then they disappear. Right. And now we know where they disappear. They disappear to this place where they get frozen. But then why didn't mom and grandma turn feral first? Like, why did they immediately go to freeze? And if you could do the freeze without the feral thing, why would you feral thing? Like, none of this makes any sense to me.
to sow discord. And honestly, I think he's making them all go feral to freak people out so that
But then why do you freeze them? Why would you take them out? Like,
in
if
case
you really
he
want
needs
to sow
them.
Discord, he needs them now. He's trying to sow discord. Like, you literally just said that. Okay, anyway, let's move on to the fetch quest because I don't want to make a 3-hour episode about a decom movie.
So the
Any
first
movie,
place
not just a decom movie.
The first place they go is a salon for hair of a werewolf. And
because they remember from the book, remember the book has the, she goes, ooh, a dog man. And you see that a werewolf is in a salon. And once again, what is in the book will come to pass.
Right. One thing I noted about this salon is that the people in this salon, the monsters, all have a serious case of Star Trek character syndrome, where they're all just humans with things glued to their faces.
Oh, dude, like, do we want to go down that road right now? Because we can go down that road right now. I mean,
I just thought it was funny. You know what I mean by Star Trek character syndrome, where like Star Trek,
oh, absolutely.
all of the aliens were just humans with, you know, they all had two eyes and a nose and a mouth, and it was just humans with various things glued to their faces. And it just was very apparent in this scene that like that's what most of these monsters are.
Hey now, Tribbles were not humans, so sure. Not all of them are, but yes, the vast majority, and I totally know what you're talking about, but yeah, if we want it, let's go down that real fast, because Halloween Town is a weird thing where on the one hand there were some of the makeup work that was done on this was really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then other times you have people walking, so like some of the characters, like for example, Hip Lewis's
salesman?
Credit? Yeah, Hip Sells, whatever. Anyway, like I thought he had really good, you know, that was really well done makeup. Or like the pumpkin heads, or you
it
know,
was well done enough that I did not recognize him as poor sweet Lewis from Last Man on Earth.
Right. Or like Calabar when he's evil bar. There's a lot of really good ones. And then other times you've got people that are basically like, I think, and again, the whole 24 days, $4 million to do it tells me that, yes, this is totally the case. Costuming went, well, we can afford to do these things, but now our budget just got cut. So somebody head on down to the, you know, costuming store and just find every Halloween costume you can. Because other times I see people walking around in like a fairy costume with like the clip-on wings on their back or something, and I'm thinking, aren't we in like this isn't Earth? This is Halloween Town where the fairies are supposed to be real fairies. So
they're
why they got
fairies.
You know? Yeah. So why do they just have some glitter makeup on and some pin-on? Yeah, you can tell where the budget ran out. On a lot of these, a lot of this costuming, not so with the major, like the dog, the werewolf dog man. I don't know. He was kind of weird for a werewolf. Yeah.
He was a dog man. He was not a werewolf.
Okay. Thank you. Cause quite honestly, when they were like, that's a werewolf, I'm like, no, that's not, that's a dog man. Werewolves aren't dogs to start with.
Stephen P. Dogman.
Yeah, yeah. His makeup was very well done as well. So there's a gamut there in costuming.
Yeah, but they get they basically trick the werewolf into letting him shave the back of his head with a flaming hair dryer. I don't know.
I'm gonna call shenanigans on get him to let they shave him.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything...
They get him to turn around, and they shave the back of his head surreptitiously.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything near him giving consent for this to happen.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. No consent.
And by the way, so the way that they do this is Marnie is, you know, distracting, and she does this by picking up a hairdryer, which she had to have no way... Like, how does she know what that hairdryer is going to do? She doesn't.
She absolutely does not.
She turns on the hairdryer, and all of a sudden, there is a flame. It is a flamethrower. It is not a hairdryer. It is a flamethrower.
Which was apparently a practical effect.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Totally awesome. Don't CGI that. Definitely go with the practical effects when you can. But explain to me, please, in Halloween Town, why flamethrower, hairdryer?
They
why?
Still have hair.
Not after that thing, they don't.
Even monster hair will burn. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happens with the flamethrower hairdryer. I'd love to see a behind-the-scenes look at the Halloween Town salon and how they dry hair with that thing.
Yeah, I want to see where the writer justified that would exist in that salon. Like, where in their mind did they go, and this is why... You would have a flamethrower hairdryer in the Halloween Town salon.
I believe it was distraction.
It's just there for whoever needs to distract whenever they need to distract. But anyway,
we've
got step one.
Clearly, Dogman has never turned it on because he seems equally as shocked about the hairdryer. Well, he's
I think he tells her that she's operating it incorrectly.
Perhaps.
Like, oh, no, you can't hit that button. You can't. So I think that he knows that it flamethrower. But, like, how can there exist a way of hitting the buttons where you end up with a flamethrower?
Yeah. This is a gas hairdryer. It's very strange.
They're so much more efficient than electric.
So the next thing they need is the sweat of a ghost. And so where do you go to find sweaty things? A gym. A health club. And so they head over to a health club. And Dylan says something very poignant. He says, "Ghosts are dead. Why would they worry about fitness?" It's a good question, bud. I don't know why ghosts would be worried about fitness, but turns out Fatty Arbuckle, which was the first person I thought of when I saw this ghost, is there. And he's, you know, just as old 1920s New York or whatever, 1820s, I have no idea, New York as anything you've ever seen. And he gets in a steam coffin. I'm really not sure what kind of thing he's in, but it appears to only exist to make him sweat, which is good because that's all they need. So they, what do? They just make fun of him to make him mad. Sophie makes ghost sounds, and I guess when he gets mad, he gets sweaty.
Which by the way, we're taught to her. Yeah, so I don't know. Again, why do you do the thing? Yeah, that's a ongoing question with this movie because they turned up the heat.
Everyone knows.
On the sweat thing.
I guess it was another distraction.
Yes, because otherwise he wasn't going to stay in there, or he was going to notice that it was getting too hot, I guess. But he was too busy being offended by Sophie's, like, her ghost impression, which was
stereotypical ghost impression. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So apparently grandma's a little bit of a ghostist or something.
Yikes.
I mean, yeah. Well, hey, that is the way that they set up this movie is all that I'm saying. But why did you have to do anything? Because the ghost had gotten into a deal that was going to make him sweat.
Definitely felt like they could have just sat there and wait, like hid behind the counter and waited and watched a bead of sweat roll down his nose and just like run up there with their little vial and go like, boop, see you later.
Yoink.
Yeah.
Or you know what? Here's an easier way to do that. Like pretend that you are an attendant at the gym. Wait about, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes so that he's got a good sweat going on. Then you walk up and go, "Oh, sir, let me help you with that." Mop his brow with a towel, right? And then just go wring that out into the vial. And he doesn't even have to know that you're doing it. And it's so much easier.
Ain't nobody got time for that. These kids are on a mission. Their grandma and mom are frozen in time. So the third thing they need is a vampire's fang. And this is where Marnie actually does what you said. Marnie poses as a dental hygienist, and the dentist just happens to be pulling a vampire's fang at the exact right moment, and Marnie just kind of walks up with a tray, and the dentist puts the tooth on the tray, and she steals it.
So watching that scene, did you notice after the vampire's fang got pulled?
That they just wrapped the tooth in electrical tape? Like, it wasn't
yeah, they
good.
They blacked out that tooth, and it was blatantly obvious. Because it's still, like, reflecting light and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, they did so many digital effects that seemed like they would have been more,
just darken the tooth.
They did. I think they did. But it's like they went, let's just use Sharpie.
Yeah,
and call it a day or something. I don't know, but yeah, the tooth was really, really obvious that it was still there.
So bad, but so they very easily. It seems like again we were running out of time, and they just said, "Man, she gets the tooth," and that's fine. So they get the tooth. They make the potion, and they pour it into Merlin's talisman, and we get a little bit of a family working together moment, because Marnie can't remember the spell that Grandma said to, you know, activate the talisman, but Sophie made a little song about it, which is, you know, both charming and makes sense for a little girl to have made her little song about the spell. So Sophie remembers a spell, and Grandma had said at the beginning, when she was, you know, doing the spell herself, that spells work better when you have more than one witch, you know, working together. And so Marnie and Sophie sing Sophie's little song about this, or of the spell, and they get the talisman activated. And so they're everybody, Sophie and Dylan and Marnie, are very happy that the flashlight turned on. They're super stoked, because now they have Merlin's talisman, which is a flashlight.
Yeah, it's a flashlight with a globe on the end
with
of
a ball
it.
That's, at the end.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's like one of those big mag lights. I mean, that's nice and everything. But by the way, we need to step back just a minute, because one thing we did skip over, when Marnie and Grandma, because Marnie asks, we're stepping all the way back to the broom. Because Marnie's asking, how does it go? And the salesperson says, well, by magic. And so Grandma has to take her on her broom ride to use the magic. And they're having this discussion about, you know, Grandma is explaining how magic works. And how magic works is you decide what you want, and then you allow yourself to have it. That's basically what we say, right?
Yeah, you got to want it. And then you just let yourself have it.
Yeah, yeah. Which is
you just want it, and then you just let yourself have it. And that's how magic works.
No, I tell you what, I've got two words that will explain magic to you, my friend. Treat yourself. That is magic. That is magic.
Pretty
Treat
much.
Yourself. That is what is explained as how magic works to Marnie. And so that's in that way, you know what though? What that does kind of tell me is it explains why Sophie would be better at magic in this time than Marnie
right.
would. Because Marnie is older, Marnie has learned self-control. And
Marnie's been beaten down by the realities of life.
Right, right. As you and I both know, young kids, they just like, oh, I want what I want, and I should have what I want. You know, like, I want to, what, I think tonight, you know, my daughter, she didn't want to eat dinner, and after dinner, she wanted a snack, and she was told at dinner she wasn't going to get to have a snack if she didn't eat, you know, like, this is your food, you're not getting a snack after. That didn't stop her from wanting a snack after, and from trying to get in the pantry to get herself a snack, because in her mind, I want a snack. I should allow myself to have a snack. So with everything that this movie yada yadas and plot got a plot and all of those things, that is actually something that in my mind made sense. And I was like, okay, well, that's why Sophie's better at magic.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that definitely explains why, and why they would have said Marnie was better at it earlier
when she was younger. Yeah,
so one thing I noticed is when they first activate the talisman while they're in the house, it is a very warm light. Cut to the next scene where they're back outside in the town square, and the color temperature of Merlin's talisman has, I guess, white balanced itself to be more of a daylight shade, because it has changed to a bright white, hospitally looking kind of light. And I was kind of like, I don't know why would they either this is a white balance issue and it happened in camera and no one caught it, or they had two talismans with two different color temperature bulbs in them and no one thought, like, hey, maybe the bulbs should both be the same color.
I could definitely see it, like, nerdy. I could definitely see it being a white balance thing where, because, you know, in the house, you're going to be mostly indoor lit, and that outdoor scene, like, there is no, you're not going to overpower the sun,
right,
with your light. Now, if you have the budget, I'm sure you can, you know, and you can always do a lot in post to color correct those scenes, but none of those things seem like something you'd be worried about on a TV movie. So I could see it being that. But I think it's maybe even more likely that, if you think about it, like, what is going to show up in direct sunlight is going to need to be so significantly bright that to use that exact same bulb and that exact same talisman for that indoor shot would have just blown out all everything, right?
So I would agree with you, but it goes back to warm when Calabar shows up. So it's like only the 5-10
seconds.
Okay,
then it's a white balance issue.
Yeah, only the short amount of time right after they get out to the town square and before Calabar shows up, it's like a daylight temperature. And then as soon as Calabar shows up, it goes back to the, you know, more warm temperature. So I'm just really not sure what happened there. But anyway, they come back out, and Marnie is going to go put the talisman inside of the big jack-o'-lantern. But Calabar shows up, or I guess at that point the bad thing shows up and tells, you know, everyone, like, hey, I'm here to take over. And
we're taking over Earth. We're tired of being relegated to this Halloween town. And this is after they have taken the talisman, you know, because they're thinking the talisman's going to solve everything. We just take it to Mom and Grandma. They take it to Mom and Grandma. It does nothing. And then Marnie repeats, you know, what Grandma said when they first got there, which is mortal see, mortal do. Which means that, you know, all of our Halloween stuff is nothing but a take on their traditions. And then she realizes, oh, where do you put the light on Halloween? Where do you put the candle? In the pumpkin. And that's how we get to that part.
So Calabar, yeah, his whole big plot is he's tired of being relegated to Halloween Town, which I guess implies that at some point in the past, monsters were on Earth.
They were, but they were hunted by humans, and so they separated and went to their own world because humans thought that all monsters were evil, and not all monsters were evil. There are good monsters and bad monsters, just like there are good humans and bad humans. This was, I think Grandma tells us this at some point. Like, early on, she's telling us the history of Halloween Town.
Man, I totally miss that. Because Calabar's motivations made absolutely no sense to me. I was like, man, this guy is bananas. He is just nuts.
His motivations made no sense to me because Grandma, I felt like the way she described it is, you know, this is where we want to be. And Calabar describes it as, you know, this is not where we want. Though, let's just go a little bit further forward, because I assume you're going to point out that this isn't his actual motivation anyway, right?
Right. He's saying, like, yeah, we're going to take over, and I'm going to rule both dimensions and blah, 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 whatever. And he sees the red cloak that Marnie was wearing earlier moving through the crowd. And he says, oh, little Cromwell, give me the talisman. And the cloak doesn't stop moving. And so Calabar jumps down and says, how dare you disobey me? And he, you know, pulls back the cloak, and it's Luke, who was, you know, originally Calabar's little, you know, henchman. And he has turned to the light side and is working with Marnie to distract Calabar so Marnie can run over to the jack-o'-lantern and get Merlin's talisman put in there to save the day. And Marnie climbs up the jack-o'-lantern and almost gets it in there, and she gets hit by the freezy beams, and it seems like all hope is lost. But Marnie's got the same kind of juice that Grandma's got, and she's got a little bit left in the tank after she gets hit with the freezy beam, enough to drop the talisman so that it lands perfectly in the little talisman-sized hole in the jack-o'-lantern, which causes Calabar to be destroyed.
Well, no, Calabar doesn't get destroyed. That causes the Halloween Town to come back. But then he pulls the talisman out of the pumpkin, and then
Look, let me just say, we have hit the point where it was 11:30 last night.
This is where we find out the other thing that Brad said. You know, I guess it was thrown in to be funny, but this is where we find out that no, this whole time we've been told that Dylan is, you know, just a normal old human. By the way, this is another one of those Harry Potter things, because, you know, Calabar's like, you can't do anything to me, you little half human. I mean, I was waiting for him to say mudblood any second. But, you know, Dylan has been, you know, because Dad was a human, therefore Dylan is going to be a human as well. But then his fingers start to glow blue in some, he's got suboptimal. He's basically Palpatine if they didn't have nearly as much budget to make Palpatine's little electro hands work.
I was going to say he's got Miles Morales in Into the Spider-Verse energy.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that works too. But anyway, so we find out that he's a warlock, and this is where they rip off Elf, because, you know, the entire family is going to get together to call back the talisman from Calabar, and it's not working. Marnie opens her eyes, realizes that he's not taking part, and then he takes part, and suddenly they have the power to take it from Calabar. That is when the talisman, you know, makes Calabar disappear. I assume until next movie, because it's called Calabar's Revenge.
Yeah. This is also where Marnie drops the sick burn, hey, chocolate bar. And I don't want to let that fall to the wayside, because that's a pretty great burn on the name Calabar.
And is somewhat, it's a bit of comeuppance for him, because he can't remember. So that has to be another, like, thread that got left on the floor. Like, why can he not remember Sophie's name?
He keeps calling her Soapy.
Yeah. Like, at first I thought, oh, it's, you know, ha ha ha, I'm so good with the kids, I pretend like I can't remember your name because ha ha ha, I'm such a funny guy. But then he's, you know, he keeps leaning into it to the point where I'm like, okay, so he legitimately doesn't remember her name? Or
so you don't know?
Yeah, or he's just, this is actually a diss or something. I don't know. I still don't understand that whole side of things. But yes, chocolate bar was a good one. You know, between Luke being called a wiener and chocolate bar, I mean, we've got some good burns. You know, we've got some stuff that you can take home and use in your day-to-day life, as long as you know somebody else whose name happens to be Calabar or something else that happens to rhyme with chocolate bar pretty close.
So, yeah, and then we get the very Disney ending where the whole family has to work together, and together they defeat Calabar, and he's poofed into oblivion, and Halloween Town is saved, and everyone's happy.
And Luke gets turned back into his old school thing, and, you know, even when I was attractive, I wasn't really attractive because I couldn't get a date with, but you turned attractive before she showed up, so, like,
it's such a weird, like, if they just left that line out, it would have made no difference. But yeah, he's like, I must not have been that attractive because I couldn't get a date with you. And it's because you were a butthole, bud. Like, he was a jerk.
Or you could have had him. He could have had some self-realization and been like, I guess I wasn't really that attractive because everybody still hated me or something like that, you know?
Maybe instead beauty of the is just on the skin nose deep, thing. Man. Yeah. It's just weird that they equated his, like, beauty to getting a date with her. It was very strange. But anyway, yeah, so we see the large nose and bad face of Luke. Luke's real true form. And then, yeah, Mom likes Halloween again and is embracing being a witch. And
invites,
you know,
Grandma to come live with them. Which, yeah, by the way, isn't that a lot for Grandma to now leave Halloween Town, where she's been living for, you know, some hundreds of years? And
yeah, where the family house is, and where she made a point of saying that's where she wants to be. It's like the opposite of putting your elderly mother in a home.
And in fact, she's actually said that she wanted, you know, there's nothing keeping you over in the human realm anymore. So I'd like for you, you know, maybe you could move back and know, Mom, this is, you know, this is where I want to be. I want to be in the human realm. So I don't know. There's some more weirdness here at the end of the movie. As we have done with all of this movie that has led to this, oh my gosh, we are probably going to have a runtime almost as long as this actual film.
We have surpassed the runtime of the film.
I'm trying to count post edit. I'm really hoping post edit. We're still clocking in just a little bit shy. If you start digging pretty deep, it unravels in quite a few different ways in quite a few different places. Why is Luke the bus driver?
He's the bus driver.
Yeah. Did you not catch that? Like they're like, hey Luke, we've got a job for you, and then he's going to be the bus driver. And I'm like, so that makes now he feels wanted and valued because he's the bus driver in the town. And what happened to the other? But like maybe I missed that part because maybe that's the part where I kind of checked out or something. But I was totally confused about the whole Luke is going to be the bus driver part of this this ending.
Can I ask you a question? It
would be kind of silly not to do it. Dad's dead.
Was that supposed to be some kind of subplot? Because they say, so I told Claire when it first started, I said, here's my guess that the mom's mom, the grandma, is a witch. And that's why mom hates Halloween. And the witch is, and the grandma's going to come and on Halloween and try to get them to, you know, do something. That was my guess. And then Dylan goes, you know how weird mom gets when you talk about dad? And I was like, okay, well, then it's her mother-in-law. Like, grandma is dad's mom, and there's like weirdness because dad
died.
How upset
she gets when you talk about dad because she's sad over dad's death.
I guess I feel like there originally should have been more about dad because it's just like a throwaway and it never comes back up. The movie would never be any different if we never brought him up. Like, there's no, they never talk about the dad again.
Well,
and so
okay,
I feel
so,
like at some point so there was some more about dad.
I agree with that, but he is necessary because mom met him because we find out that because you can travel between Halloween Town and Earth on Halloween, that a lot of the monsters and witches and et cetera, from Halloween Town travel to Earth and, you know, they'll go do they'll go do like Halloween parties or they'll try to scare the mortals and things like that. And we find out that mom went to go to one of these Halloween parties and that's where she met dad and where she decided that she would rather live on Earth with this human that she fell in love with than return to Halloween Town, you know, and apparently that's, you know, I'm not sure exactly how much overlap there is between dad and Calabar, but you know, that's why Calabar is kind of not down with you know, Earth and everything. That's truly his reason, is because Earth stole his woman, because we were gonna rule together and you could have been my queen. So I think dad is necessary for that aspect of things. Yeah, there's, if you had more time, you would probably write in a little bit more about him, but you wouldn't do a whole lot because that would detract from, you know, the primary from you know, Marnie, which is ostensibly what this whole story is about. Yeah. And you wouldn't want to get too muddled by getting too deep into dad. But yes, that's why dad exists. That's why we have to bring him up and everything, because yeah, that's what mom left for. And that's why grandma says, hey, you know, there's really nothing tying you to this realm anymore. You should just come back to Halloween Town with me. And mom's like, no, I made this decision. I want my kids to be humans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I can see that, I guess. So this is movie number 4. How does your ranking go now?
This is, okay, so prior to this, it was Brink, Under Wraps, and You Lucky Dog? Is that the name of that movie?
The dog one.
Okay. This one goes above all of those.
Yeah. I think without a doubt, this is the best one.
You had Under Wraps above Brink.
I did. Yeah, I think one is Halloween Town, and then And then Under Wraps, so on and so forth. And then Brink, and then You Lucky Dog. It is You Lucky Dog, but it doesn't even deserve to be called by its actual name.
The dog, that dog.
That darn dog. Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, so yep. For Letterboxd scores, because we said we were going to start doing those.
Yeah.
This one is still a solid 4, which remember is Brad saw it. It wasn't it was a decent movie. It's not an amazing movie, but it's a decent movie.
Yeah, and this
you have two.
This is a 3 for me.
Okay. So this still hasn't, cuz you say 3 and 4 positive. I say 3 is neutral, but it still hasn't, this one doesn't make it into 4 territory for you.
No. Yeah, so for me 3 is fine. 4 is good, and then 5 is perfect.
Right. And for me, I put fine and good into 1, so that way I've got space left for it is nothing. I nothing you as a movie. that's my 3 star. And this is definitely not a I nothing you as a movie. So, oh man, we made it through Halloween Town. And here's what I will say. As much as, you know, as much as we just talked about, like, when you start pulling at the threads, it all comes apart. And why this, why that? And these things that do confound me and frustrate me somewhat. At the end of the day, still a good movie.
I never once thought, man, I wonder when this is going to be over. The whole time I was watching this, I enjoyed it. I thought this was a good little, you know, this is a good little movie.
And you know what? Actually, I would like to see, well, okay. So I think this movie has a bit of cult status. So I don't want to step on anybody's toes.
It definitely
about this, but I actually wouldn't mind seeing this movie get redone with the budget that it could now command, and, you know, actually get some of the, like, find out why that Sophie, you know, basically all of these things that somewhat are plot holes, but are probably more likely things that got left behind. Actually seeing those get fleshed out, I think would be interesting.
I think an extra 15 minutes would have done this movie good.
Yeah, because it like you said, you were never thinking.
It would have let it breathe a little bit.
Yeah, you were never thinking, when is this going to be over? But I do remember thinking, wow, that all happened really fast to get us to this point. But I forgive a lot of that with DCOM movies because it's a TV movie.
Right.
So it's got to fit into the runtime. And it's you can't say, hey, this one really needs to be an hour 45, or this one really needs to be a 2 hour 10 minute movie, because that ain't the format, bud.
Yeah. So I think I'm happy with this one. I think it's pretty good, especially given what came before it. This is definitely the best written and the most well made film. I am so looking forward to the next one, though.
What is our next one?
Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century.
Oh yes, Xenon. That's where we're going next. Man, yeah. we're starting to hit our stride when it comes to DCOM movies now.
Uh huh. Yeah. The next, if we do 4 a year,
if our lives allow us to do what we're supposed to do.
There's a few in here that either I've never seen or I'm not, you know, looking super forward to, but we've got about 4 years of a pretty good run of movies. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, let's close this one up and get ready for the next one.
That'll do it for this movie review. You can follow us on Twitter at MTM Podcast. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/MTM Podcast. You can visit us on the web at missingthemouse.co. We'll be back in a while with our review of Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century. Until then, have a magical day.